What You Need to Know is presented by Straight Talk Wireless. All right, here's what you need to know. At the moment, we will give you an update on what's going on at the PGA Championship. Lee Haotong is your leader right now from China at 8 under par. Just some notables as far as what's happening there. Brooks Koepka is 4 off the pace. He has yet to tee off at the moment. Bryson DeChambeau is also 4 off the pace. He is through the front nine at the moment. Tony Finau will tee off a little later. So will Adam Scott, Patrick Reed, and Tiger Woods as well. So Tiger is 2 under as of yesterday and again hasn't teed off yet. He will tee off at 1:58. I would imagine this is Pacific time. So just about 3 hours before Tiger tees off, and we'll see after a pretty good first day what he does. Next, we have a situation in Oakland. I don't know if you guys saw this, Greg Bergman, where Ryan Christensen, the A's first base coach, unintentionally made apparently a Nazi salute. You know, he did the straight arm thing when as guys were walking into the dugout. He has since apologized, saying he did it unintentionally. As you see the video, one of his players literally grabbed his arm, broke protocol, and bent his elbow because guys are doing, instead of high-fiving, they're elbow bumping each other. And yeah, it was just awkward. The whole thing, very awkward.
Yeah, it was. I know he apologized for it. I appreciate the apology. I don't believe him for a second that wasn't on purpose. It was too straight and pointed to the air. And then not only did after the player pull his arm down, he turned around and did it again.
No, he pointed at him like he didn't do it again. He pointed.
Yes, he did. I've watched the video again. He went towards the fans basically and put it up again. This wasn't a joke. This wasn't him. This was him joking around. This was serious. I don't like this one whatsoever, and I think it's very offensive. And an apology is not enough.
No question, it's offensive. But I do think, as I'm watching the video again for another time, I've seen it multiple times, and I'm watching it right now. And I will tell you. So here goes. He bent the elbow. No, he pointed at him, Greg. He did do it to the fans after. You're right.
Yeah.
Right.
He did
I cut the video off at that after he pointed, but yes, he did do it to the fans again.
Yes, well, I mean, to the cardboard cutouts, but either way, it doesn't matter.
He did it twice. That's whack.
Yep.
There's really no other way of describing it. It's awful. Like, you shouldn't do that. Not cool.
There's no place in this world for that, period. End of story.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. Like, I don't understand how anyone doesn't know what that, like, if you're going to claim you did it unintentionally or just being naive, like, how does anyone not know what that is? Like,
right.
I can understand if you're like a kid and you don't know, you know what I mean? Like, but a grown ass man, like, come on.
Right. I mean, have you never watched any type of movie? Did you not have any type of history class? Like, that was not an accident. I'm sorry. He's done that before.
Yeah, for sure. That is super, super weird and not cool. In the least. We have one more story here before we get to your part of this that you like to do is making fun of the Astros. The Cubs and Cardinals postponed after players test positive. The Cardinals continue to have more postponed games. Like, everyone was making fun of the Marlins early on, but now the Cardinals are slowly but surely creeping up on them because the Marlins are back playing again.
Yeah, and they're 7-1. That's the best record they've had since they won a World Series, which is kind of crazy. But I don't know what's going on with them with St. Louis. How do you continue to have these positive tests? Like, just intubate yourself. What's the word I'm looking for? Intubate?
You mean quarantine?
Well, yeah, quarantine, but yeah, whatever. Yeah. Oh, fine.
No,
quarantine.
Intubate would mean that you would put a tube in someone's mouth. You don't want to do that.
No. Incubate. No, you don't want to do that. Yes. Incubate, maybe Laura was right. Whatever.
The incubate. Word yes.
Yes, incubate. Yes. That's the word I was looking for.
Got you.
Thank you. Thanks, Laura. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank God Laura's here to always save you.
Yeah, that's what she's there for. So thank you, Laura. I couldn't do it without you.
Yes. Go ahead, Greg. I got one more thing, but I'll let you go and do your daily making fun of the Astros. Go ahead.
Well, your 6-6 .500 Astros lost again last night to the Arizona Diamondbacks, who the Arizona Diamondbacks are not a very good team. They're below .500 and just beaten up on the Astros somehow. George Springer, 0-3. He's batting .182. Altuve and Bregman had pretty good games, but still, Altuve is still batting a robust .192. Alex Bregman, it pushed himself up to a .235 batting average. So it's still pretty, pretty bad.
Yeah, so there you have it. That's what you need to know. One last thing in what you need to know, as Greg likes to make fun of the Astros. Today's National Beer Day. What is your favorite beer, Laura?
When I used to drink beer, it was my go-to was a Corona.
Okay. I like how you said it with a very Latina accent.
Yeah, Mexican. Corona. Corona.
Greg?
Big fan of the Kona Longboard.
Oh, Kona Longboard. That's what you said. That she was a big fan, too. I am a Golden Road Brewing Bango Cart fan. I don't love beer all that much.
Bango Cart?
I do. I love Mango Cart. I had it at Golden Road Brewing last year when we did that Angels thing that we did where I threw out the first pitch with LZ. And it was really, really good. And I have since bought it. And I don't drink a lot of beer, to be honest with you. I drink a lot of wine and I drink a lot of spirits, but not a lot of beer. And
is that more of a wheat beer?
It is more of a wheat beer with a T at the end. Yes.
That's what I said.
You sounded like you said weed with a D.
No.
I thought so too.
Right?
No. Yeah.
Laura?
I thought you said weed. No lie.
No. You definitely said weed.
I'm going to go back to that audio.
Yeah, go back and play it back. Since we played him burping yesterday on the air, not realizing he was on the air.
I'm not talking about where you go to the Green Cross. You're going to a regular place to get beer for this.
There's nothing wrong with the Green Cross.
There is nothing wrong with the Green Cross.
Yes, I'm going to be on vacation next week. Perhaps a Green Cross is in my future. Because vacation will mean I'm at home hanging out and doing a lot of nothing. And I will be happy doing a lot of nothing. All right, 710 Sedano Show presented by Progressive Insurance. All our guests like Ryan Russillo, who joins us in 10 minutes, will appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. All right, he will give us the straight talk as well, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. So we were talking about the Lakers, and if you weren't tuning in earlier, it kind of dawned on me, right? Like a little bit yesterday towards the end of the show, and I thought more of it today, and I had this discussion this morning with Amin on another show about LeBron. And LeBron is very much regimented in everything that he does, right? Like there is a buildup to him being at optimal strength and power and dexterity and at the peak of his powers at a certain point of the year, especially as he's gotten older. This has been certainly part of his regimen. And I remember now in retrospect when the season was first suspended that in a Zoom call he talked about he was asked about, like, hey, how does this affect you, this potential time off? It's indefinite. We don't know at the time. It's clearly been 4-plus months since they came back on the floor. And he was like, man, I don't know. But to be honest, I don't think offhand that it's a good thing because I'm used to doing it a certain way. And clearly we've seen that that seems to be an issue. And I just think that adds another layer as far as the challenge that is presented for the Lakers in their quest to try to win their 17th championship. Like, I'm not saying that I'm still not betting on him because I will bet on LeBron until the wheels fall off. I am going to place my bets on LeBron. And when that happens, then I will reassess. But it is certainly something that is a different layer than he's ever really had to deal with. Much like last year was the first time he had to deal with an actual injury, a significant one in season, this is another interesting roadblock that he will have to overcome. And I'm curious to see because he is not performing anywhere near LeBron levels in this restart in the four games he's played. Granted, a small sample size, but still at least something I would say to keep an eye on. Let's go to the phones. Sam is in North Hollywood. Sam, how are you, sir?
Hey, Mr. Sedano, you are the man. I love the show. I will be listening at 4 o'clock when you guys switch over, that's for sure.
Thank you.
I just want to say, anybody who calls and says they're rooting for the Clippers if the Lakers lose, they're not Lakers fans. They're Clippers fans. They just pretend to be Lakers fans because we're better. But my real question for you is, I know you'll bet on LeBron all day, but how do you feel about LeBron's finals record? Because he doesn't have the best finals record.
But he also hasn't had the best team every time. Like, he certainly didn't have the best team in his first finals appearance in 2007.
That's for sure.
The only one that I really think that he botched was the 2011 series against the finals. He played in that series and scored 10 points below his average. He averaged 17 points per game in that series. Dwayne Wade did everything that he could to keep that team afloat in that series while LeBron was just... I mean, he looked like he short-circuited, you know what I mean? Which is weird because in the conference finals before that against Chicago, he was unbelievable. And it just was weird. So that's really the only one I totally put on him. They won the next two, obviously, with the Heat. In the Spurs series, Dwayne was injured. Bosh wasn't necessarily himself. And the supporting cast had gotten old. And the Spurs were super motivated. And then against the Warriors, I mean, he never really had the best team. Even that first meeting against the Warriors, don't forget Kyrie got hurt in the first game and never played again. Kevin Love wasn't available. He was literally playing out there with Matthew Dellavedova as like the second best player. And then they won the one after that in incredible fashion. And then Durant came. He didn't have like the better team. So I don't put a ton of stock in his finals record outside of the 2011 finals, where I still don't know what happened, and maybe he doesn't even know what the hell happened.
Dirk was unstoppable that year. That's what happened.
Dirk
Nowitzki. He was unstoppable.
Dirk was unstoppable.
That's why they won.
They
swept the Lakers. In the playoffs.
But Dirk in the finals still only shot like 40%. He wasn't all that good. They actually did a decent job of defending him. If LeBron played to his averages in that series, Sam, and thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Stay healthy, stay safe. If LeBron, Greg, would have played to his averages, if he was averaging 27 points a game that year. If he would have just averaged his average, right? I'm not asking him to go anything more than his average. He averaged 17 in the finals. The Heat win that series. Dwayne Wade has two finals MVPs probably. It really is one of the most dumbfounding situations I've ever come across while covering basketball. Like, I could not explain it at the time, and even, you know, 9 years later, I still can't explain what happened there.
Yeah, how many times have you watched it over this quarantine where you watched that? Yeah, over and over again. You can't figure it out.
It looks like, no joke, because he's doing Space Jam. I know this is, you know, it's the irony, right? It looks like the alien snatched his powers from his body. Like, it was unbelievable to watch in real time and again later during the quarantine.
Yeah, so, no idea. There must have been something else going on, but, you know, who knows what that actually was. I was just wondering. So I was thinking about it, what you're talking about with how he has to ramp himself up. At the beginning of this year, it felt like LeBron was having issues on his drives to the basket, actually making them. He was like short arming them, and he would miss a lot of easy layups in transition, whatever it happened to be. And it seems like, and then he got through all that, and by March he was hitting everything, and whenever he was around the basket, he almost seemed perfect. And now he's doing that same thing in the bubble right now. It seems like it's an early season type thing for him, where he just hasn't gotten his legs fully back, even though he says they have. Are you noticing that as well, or am I just kind of...
Yeah, well, that's what I'm talking about. What do you think I've been talking about for an hour and 10 minutes?
Right, but I mean, that was a specific example, is what I'm saying.
Right, like, but it's part of the regimen, the ramp-up, all that stuff.
Right, it's just, I'm just agreeing with you. Like, it's crazy that I'm thinking about back in, you know, September, October, and those are the types of things that he would be missing. That's all.
Go ahead, Laura. Say what you just said.
Oh, don't, Laura. Don't
that
do
you
it.
Haven't
I know what you're
been
do.
Listening.
No.
Were you answering emails again during the show?
No, I was not answering emails. I was listening to you talk to the caller. Thank you very much.
All right. Dwayne is in L.A. Hello, Dwayne.
Hey, George.
Tell me he's wrong,
doing,
man.
I'm sorry, Dwayne. Go ahead. Greg wanted to interrupt you because he felt the need to talk over you.
That's all right, Greg, man. Greg's a good guy, man. If anybody's going to interrupt me, it'd have to be Greg.
Okay.
But anyway, man, I'm a big-time Lakers fan. I'm 52 years old. I go back, you know, with the Lakers to the 70s. But if the Lakers are out of it, I would absolutely want the Clippers to win it because it's all about L.A. pride.
Wow.
The chant around the country is beat L.A. Everybody hates L.A. You know, it's not just beat the Lakers, it's beat L.A. So if we're playing Boston, if the Clippers are playing Boston in the championship, I don't want Boston fans to get the satisfaction by beating the Clippers. You understand what I'm saying? So I'd rather the Clippers win, you know, than Boston or New York. Or I don't want those people to have satisfaction of ever winning a championship over any L.A. teams. And then also, too, I'm a USC alum, and I play football at USC. But the rivalry is us versus UCLA. But if UCLA is playing Alabama, you know, for a national championship, I don't want Alabama to win it. You know what I'm saying? I want the Pac-12 to win. I want, you know, L.A. to win. So if we're out of it, I'd rather for the other L.A. representative to win at any time.
Dwayne, I think that's all rational, and thank you for the call. Stay healthy, stay safe. I think that all makes sense, but again, the assumption is fandom is rational, and I feel like for the most part, it is irrational, including the two irrational human beings that preside on this show with me.
Hold on. You're saying irrational. Now, let's just take this
when
a little bit
further. When it comes to your fandom.
Okay. I'm going to take it to your fandom, George. You are a fan of the Miami Hurricanes, correct?
I am.
Who is their rival?
The Florida State Seminoles and the Florida Gators.
So all within the Florida
No,
area.
I don't want them to win.
Right.
I don't want them to win. But I will say this. When Florida, but more so about Florida. I really hate Florida. The Gators
right.
are awful. But the Seminoles, when Jameis Winston's team won and they beat Alabama, because Alabama had been this juggernaut and I hated the SEC, I think more, my hatred for the SEC at that time was weighted more. I was fine with Florida State winning a championship.
Okay, but I understand that Florida's
in the SEC.
But I wasn't
happy. I was fine with it.
Right. I understand Florida's in the SEC, but would you have, if it was Florida, Alabama, and Florida won, would you have been rooting for Florida?
No.
In Florida?
No.
No.
Thank you.
No. No. That's all I'm saying. That's all Laura and I are saying.
No, and look, I'll take it even further. I grew up a Dolphins fan. I would never root for the Jets. I want to make fun of the Jets at every turn.
Right. Exactly.
So I mean, get it. I get it, but I also grew up in a city that didn't have two teams, right? So that's different. It's not the
sure.
same.
Sure. Okay, if you're
really
from New York.
We two teams, though.
Like Miami and Gainesville are 6 hours apart. You know what I'm saying? Miami and Tallahassee are 8 hours apart. That's like comparing Sacramento to L.A., you know?
Okay, then let's do it for New York. The Yankees and the Mets. Do you think that any Yankee fan is going to root for the Mets?
I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I don't think so.
How about the Giants and the Jets? You think they're going to root for the other one?
You could see more of that there, but I would generally say no. All right, look, we can ask Russillo about this stuff. He grew up in the Northeast. He grew up around a lot of New York people, right? He's now lived in L.A. for a while. I want to talk basketball with him. He's going to join us in 3 minutes. Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN, presented by Progressive Insurance. Insurance for motorcycles, boats, RVs, and more for protection on the road, on the water. See how much you could save in as little as 3 minutes by calling 1-800-PROGRESSIVE or visiting their website at progressive.com. Ryan Russillo will join us here in just a second. You heard the big voice. New lineup August 17th. Keyshawn, Jay Williams, and Zubin, and Travis in the morning. Then, of course, Greeny at 9, the return of Max Kellerman at 11 a.m. to ESPN Los Angeles, Mason in Ireland back in the midday at 1 o'clock, myself back in the afternoons, joined with my buddy LZ Granderson from 4 to 7, and Scott Kaplan at 7 o'clock. That's how we'll do it. Cap will be on when there are no games, so looking forward to it. Taking next week off, Ben Lyons will be in for me next week with Laura and Greg, and I'm sure plenty of shenanigans will ensue. All right, speaking of Laura and Greg, I want to bring Ryan on because I want to bring him into the discussion I was just having with them. Ryan Russillo of the Ringer. Make sure you subscribe to the Ryan Russillo Show podcast. Make sure you subscribe to the Bill Simmons podcast. Him and Ryan do the show every Sunday night that you can hear on Monday mornings and beyond, of course. But make sure you subscribe to the Russillo Show podcast. So, Ryan, here's what we were just discussing, dude. So, a caller just randomly called in and just was like, hey, man, I know we're talking a lot about the Lakers and I'm a Laker fan, but you know what? If the Clippers win, like, I'll be good with that. Paul George and Kawhi are kids who played high school ball here. They're from L.A., et cetera, et cetera. To which I responded to him, yo, look, that's really rational. And I get it. Like, I'm with you. Like, I understand it. However, fandom is irrational. And nothing is a better example of that than the two really nice people I have here in Laura, who you just spoke to, and Greg, who I deal with every day, but yet are completely irrational about their sports. You lived in the Northeast, granted, you know, more in the Massachusetts area, but you'd been around New Yorkers. Like, I don't remember Yankee fans rooting for the Mets or Jets fans rooting for the Giants or et cetera. And I feel like most LA fans aren't rooting for the Clippers, but what do you make of that dynamic when you have two sports teams in a city?
I just don't imagine Lakers fans care enough because the Clippers have been as little of a threat as you could even imagine. Like even when you think it's kind of good, it doesn't never really turn into anything, you know? So a Lakers fan that wants to root for them, It's not the same thing as like a Yankees fan rooting for a Mets fan. You know, it just isn't. I remember when I was in college and we had all those tri-state area guys, Jersey, New York, Connecticut guys, and you know, they'd be rooting for the Devils because the Devils were good, and then the Rangers would win and they'd be rooting for the Rangers. And I go, what do you guys do? Just pick from one of the 12 teams? Like you have like, what is this? This is lame. And so, you know, some of those guys would just go, well, I actually was always a Rangers fan, but I'm from New Jersey. I'm like, well, then none of it counts. So if you're a Lakers fan, I just don't feel it. And look, I've only been out in the city for a couple of years, but I just don't feel this angst of Lakers fans towards the Clippers. Now, a Clippers fan rooting for the Lakers seems impossible because you've just been dumped on the entire time you've been a Clippers fan. And, you know, you almost feel like a second-class citizen in the city. So I guess I can understand a Lakers fan doing that, but it almost is more out of just interest in basketball than any rooted hatred towards a team that's posed no threat.
Greg, would you care to respond to Ryan why it is you can't root for the Clippers if they were to beat the Lakers?
I think he's pretty right on. I'm not going to root for the Clippers because I've never cared about them. And the fact is that they're the little brother in LA. And if they put up one banner up in Staples Center, that's a win for them. And I don't want to see any banners that are not just their faces
Laura,
over our banners.
Laura loves – that's Laura's line.
You yes. Just
you stole Laura's line.
Sorry,
hold on.
Laura.
Don't
Ryan,
lie.
He stole Laura's line. Laura, tell Ryan the line that you like to use to make fun of the Clippers. Tell him.
They have selfies at Staples Center. That's what they have, and I don't want them putting anything but their selfies up there. It's how it is. How I like it. That's
well,
how it's been
look,
my entire life.
Look, I can respect that. Concede nothing. You know, negotiation. Yeah. We want you to have nothing. But let's face it, like when you have a rival, it pains you when they're good. It just pains you. You root against them. Any Lakers fans that I know, I just don't think they care, which actually is more demeaning to not even really care as opposed to hate.
Yeah. I'm with you wholeheartedly. All right, let's talk real basketball here. So, Rosillo, a lot of people, including myself, I feel like may have misjudged something here with LeBron. He's playing, you know, granted, small sample size, four games, but he's not playing well. And he sits last night, and it kind of dawned on me late in the show yesterday, just kind of like an epiphany. I'm like, dude, this is pretty simple. Like, I should have thought of this earlier. Because he even alluded to it in one of the early Zoom calls right after the season was suspended, that his ramp up, like, there is a legitimate process that he goes through, and every detail is mapped out where he is supposed to be peaking at a certain time of year. And as he's gotten older, it's become more and more important. And the 4 months off may have been worse for him because now he's got this truncated restart trying to ramp up for the playoffs and doesn't necessarily have the ability to do it the way he's been used to doing it for the better part of the last 6, 7, 8 years or whatever it's been. How concerned are you about LeBron, you know, not to make this like a big deal because it's only four games, but the more I think about it, it may be deeper or more of an issue than we have thought initially.
I'm not dismissive of what you're saying. I'm just not worried about LeBron. I'm just not. The shooting has been terrible. I mean, the shooting's so bad it'd be hard to even do what they wanted to by design in some of the nights where they just can't hit a shot. I mean, the Oklahoma City game was just disgusting. We all know these guys. I've been really impressed with how hard they've worked out, how they've maintained their conditioning. You know, look, all these guys are posting how much they work out, so obviously they must be working out all the time. They're posting it. But there's no replicating. There's no replicating an NBA game. Like, everybody knows that. He is really not what I'm worried about. I think he's been very passive, deferring in the first half of some of these games. When they came back and beat the Clippers, you know, he wasn't having a great game, and then he kind of just took over those last few stretches, so I think that's a positive. Really, it feels like the Lakers, I think it's a Lakers problem more than it's a LeBron problem. There's two things. One is they're not taking this as seriously as some of the other teams are, but they're also not as they're not as settled as they need to be. And losing Rondo and losing Bradley, and they still were probably playing with their closing group a little bit more than they wanted to when it was still in the normal regular season. And now they're trying to figure out that closing group. And, you know, even though Deion Waiters has had some moments, and this is kind of a league problem, I've noticed even with good teams that don't really know what their rotation is, as we're a couple weeks away from the playoffs, you can see guys that see that minutes are available trying to do too much in some of those closing moments. And I've seen it with Waiters. I still feel like Kuzma's a little lost. I think Davis has had these up-and-down games where, you know, against Toronto, he was terrific in understanding the trap, but at some point you needed to be more aggressive. And he was a mess again in the Thunder game. So I think it's more because when I look at them and I've watched all these games since the return, LeBron's not the first thing that stands out. I'm not disagreeing with you. It's just of all my things that I'd worry about with this team, he's not at the top of the list.
Oh, no, look, I'm with you. I just think it adds a layer of intrigue and perhaps even sure. another challenge, right? Like for the Lakers to try to overcome potentially as we get here to the postseason here in a very short order. I'm betting on that dude until the wheels fall off. You know what I mean? Like that's and until that happens, I'm not going to take that back. So I am with you. I do think that, again, it's just one of those things like, this might be different than we anticipated. So just something to keep an eye on. The Anthony Davis stuff. I'm normally not this guy, Russillo, where it's like, oh, I don't believe you can do it until I see you do it. But there is something particularly against him with the Clippers, right? Like there's been plenty of numbers highlighted about his fourth quarter performances. And I looked it up. I mean, he's played about 27 minutes in the four fourth quarters combined, and he's only totaled 8 points. He's not taking a lot of shots either. So to what you were alluding to earlier, that stuff worries me more than the LeBron stuff. And again, it's not because, okay, he's not talented, but it's a personality-driven thing that I think that he needs to be shaken out of because it's like, hey, dude, there's a huge drop-off from you to the third best guy on this team.
Well, there I totally agree with you. And I love Davis. You know, I've defended him throughout his entire career. You know, when people want to knock him, they're like, oh, he hasn't really done anything. Like, that whole New Orleans thing was a mess. Everybody's hurt all the time. And, you know, he missed time too. But when he played against Portland, and that was a good Portland team that everybody thought was going to beat New Orleans, and he was ascending to, after that series was over, like, hey, is this dude the best player in the league? And it wasn't a crazy argument. But like all these players, you know, no one's really perfect except for probably peak LeBron. And as much as I love Steph, he has a tendency to do some dumb stuff with turnovers late in games that burned him in game 7 and 16. But with Davis, there is a passiveness to him that's frustrating, especially when you see the version of him that we saw at the beginning of the year against Memphis. I mean, you remember that game? And he had all those free throws, but he earned every single attempt because he was just destroying those guys. And whether it's Houston last night or Houston in the first regular season game post-Capella, where I think what's happened with people that play Houston is they get so thrown off against a size mismatch that they get out of their own offense trying to take advantage of it, and it doesn't really work. And Davis was kind of forcing himself into some weird things where I go, look, I love that you understand the game. I love that he understood against Toronto, hey, they're trapping, they're doing these things, they're trying to get the ball out of my hands. But there comes a time when you're supposed to be one of the five best players in the league, which is what I believe of Davis, that you kind of have to get out of the smart, deferring play all the time and be a guy to go to, because the Lakers' bigger problem is when you compare them to some of the other teams you're going up against. And, you know, the thing I loved about Toronto's team last year, and granted they beat a hurt Golden State team, is they had like seven or eight guys that could all create a shot. Seven guys that could find a way to get a bucket on their own. And that's kind of what this league is now. And when you look around the Lakers, other than Pope's outside shooting, you know, Green's hit or miss. Kuzma still only really fits in perfectly with the other good players. And Caruso's not exactly an offensive guy. And these are guys that are going to be playing, you know, closing minutes for this team. So they need Davis to go, all right, I don't care what the play is, but I've got to get mine right now. And it worries me. I'm with you. Sometimes I worry when I watch, as much as I love him, going, all right, man, like, you've been around long enough. Like, this is on you now to just decide to take over the game.
Yeah, it is one thing that is a cause for some concern for me, for sure. Let's go around to the Clippers then, since we were just, you know, debating the merits of rooting for them a second ago. we don't know when Harrell's coming back, but what have you seen from him specifically that has been so effective for them when he's on the floor?
Well, the way they sub it out, and, you know, I don't know how they would do it, because I think if you're a Clippers fan in that loss, you point to two things. You go, hey, LeBron's worst shooting percentage against any team this year in any game is against the Clippers because they have these wings, and then you switch into, I mean, what they do with those three guys, and Beverly's right, you're like, oh, great, I switched off of Kawhi into Paul George. Cool, now I switch into Pat Beverly. Like, this sucks. But with Harrell, as much as I love Noah, those 10, 12 minutes where he was trying to chase people around, if you're a Clippers fan, you go, okay, fine, he lost to the Lakers, but those minutes won't exist in a Lakers-Clippers matchup in the playoffs. So Harrell, I think the great thing with him is this league is just small all the time and his closing groups can be smaller. He can hang with any of those guys. Now, you know, Lakers fans think no one can guard Davis, but I think Harrell's activity and the fact that Harrell makes you guard him, because if you bring up your defense to meet whatever high screen they run with Harrell, I mean, he's such a good roller to the hoop, and he's so much quicker and more athletic and can catch everything. It's a real burden as opposed to some of these other bigs that set that screen and just kind of stand there and you don't have to worry about him as much. So I really feel like balances the floor out. even though, you know, look, when he gets paid, you're going to feel like he's overpaid. He's not the number one guy you would want with this group. But when the wings are healthy, I mean, the funny thing with the Clippers, Sedano, is here we are, we're almost done with the regular season, and they haven't really felt like they know who they are this entire year, yet they have a really good record and would be my pick today to come out of the West. So, I mean, Harrell's just a nice fit that adapts to, I think, all these different size guys that are playing the five in the league.
Ryan Russillo of The Ringer joining us here, friend of the program. Make sure you subscribe to the Ryan Russillo Show podcast. Always a great listen. Let's talk about the Blazers here real quick. Clearly the team that, if you're the Lakers, you would least want to face of all these potential teams that you could face. What's been, I mean, obviously adding Nurkic and Collins has been big for them, but what are you seeing that may be different from them with those two bigs as opposed to the way they played with Whiteside?
Whiteside stinks is the first problem. He is so bad. Whenever I hear an announcer say, oh, you know, Whiteside, look at his blocks, look how great of a year he's had, I'm like, okay, you don't watch. Or you checked out a stat sheet this morning. He only cares about his own blocks. He leaves everybody else. You know, he's just lost defensively all the time. And you know that. Like, all the money and all the PER stuff and all the... When Spoelstra's benching him in close games in the fourth quarter, that's all you need to know, okay? And I'm usually not this harsh about it, but I cannot believe how many analysts talk about how good Whiteside is. And it's just, you know, this is where numbers really, really can screw us up. So now, guess what? You don't have to play him all the time. You don't have to play him in closing groups. I mean, Collins is still a young, frustrating player, but has a skill set that's such a great foundation that he, you know, he shows it in moments where you have to kind of worry about him. He's not a no guard guy, and Nurkic looks terrific, and Nurkic has a toughness, and he'll go at anybody. He's not afraid. So it totally changes their dynamic, where against Boston, you know, I don't know why it didn't work in the first half, because Boston has no size, but you would think in some of those matchups, that's a lot of size to deal with. But the other part of it that I think has been a huge, huge development for him is Gary Trent Jr. And he's hitting threes. He's tough. He allows him to be assigned, basically Portland can assign him to the ball handling guard that's a little quicker to deal with, so it takes the burden off of McCollum and Lillard, who aren't exactly shut down defensive guards. So this group can look different, and the fact that, you know, their record was obviously misleading, because I think there was a bit of a hangover after the success of last year and then not having Nurkic and then trying to figure it all out on the fly and being disappointed. That, I mean, to me right now, especially with Memphis injuries, New Orleans a mess on defense, you know, Sacramento's at least worth mentioning, but it's no contest out of that group who's the better team right now.
One last thing for you, Ryan. I was watching...
The Whiteside thing, was that too harsh?
No, that was good. That's exactly what I would have said, so I'm happy that you said it. I mean, yeah, I lived through that, so I know exactly
what
you're...
every night,
yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
He's one of the most... Like, you know how it is. Like, as soon as you hear somebody say something on a topic, you go, okay, this guy doesn't pay any attention.
Yeah. Yeah, he does pay attention to people like you and me, though. I'll never forget walking into a locker room in Miami one time after being on the jump and just saying similar things to what you just said, and him giving me the stink eye the entire time that I was there. But nonetheless, speaking of the East, I was watching the Bucks and the Heat, and I was sitting there stunned in the first half, going like, I can't believe that the Bucks look so listless. I know, you know, Giannis looks so reckless out there with the fouls. And then, dude, in that fourth quarter, what Giannis and that team, what Middleton and those guys was able to do was just incredible. There was no way else to describe it. Like, I have kind of dismissed them a little bit in the sense of like, okay, I think the Clippers and Lakers are better. But what I saw from them yesterday, just the way they came back against a good team. Like, it's not like Miami is like some crap team. You know what I mean? Like, and the way they just dismantled them, even without Butler and Dragic, there's still good players out there. I was stunned at the run that they went on. They were trailing by as much as like 20-something points, ended up winning by 14, went on a 20-0 run in the fourth. When you see Giannis, what comes to your mind immediately about what you're seeing from him right now as opposed to maybe last season?
There's just not five guys that can take over a game like him. You know, I think we still include LeBron in that group. I mean, even when Kawhi takes over, it probably aesthetically doesn't look as impressive as Giannis. And I know I've been guilty of this. Like, the first time I ever heard about the wall defense, like a few years ago, it gets Giannis. You're like, oh, you just build a wall. I'm like, what? You're like, yeah, no, you just build a wall. And all of us repeat it because it sounds like really cool. And you go, well, that's why he's special, because he can just knife through it and dunk on everybody. And you can see the three defenders try to meet him at the free throw line. I mean, TNT did some breakdown like, look at this, there's five guys. It was more like four in the paint that were paying attention to Giannis, with a fifth that kind of was outside looking at him. And they were knocking him in Miami for not doing a better job building that defensive wall. And you could, you know, sometimes you just have to concede the fact that we may have never seen anybody like this. I mean, there are seven-footers that have perimeter skills in the advancement of just athletes, you know, some of the stuff that we've seen from some of these guys over the years. But this is a whole nother level. And I noticed that Miami was doing some stuff where you double him on the catch, because he does handle the ball a lot in this offense. And that when you're 7 feet and you're still trying to dribble through traffic, like, you figure there's a chance to kind of knock the ball away and double. And he was having some problems with it. And then once he decides, okay, I'm not going to lose any of my momentum, there's nothing you can do. I guess the only thing, because we saw some of it last year in the Eastern Conference Finals, is the way other GMs, coaches, and even J.J. Redick, when I went on his podcast months ago, talk about Nick Nurse. It's the way basketball people talk about Nick Nurse's coaching is the way musicians talk about Prince. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really get it at first until people started, like, really pointing out the specific things he does and how often he changes it up. And he might be the only guy that, and I don't think Toronto's more talented, but they may be the team that figures something out and then changes it two or three more times if they end up facing each other in the Eastern Conference Finals. But that was an absolute schooling in what he did of reminding a really good Miami team, despite those two players missing, with the depth of kind of reminding them that, like, hey, there's another level to this, and none of you guys are on it.
Ryan Russillo, he's one of the best in the business. Check out his podcast. Subscribe to it, the Russillo Show podcast at The Ringer. Thank you, brother. Stay healthy. Stay safe. We'll talk soon.
Anytime. Thanks, George.
All right, brother. There he is, Ryan Russillo. Hey, couple things real quick. Ben Lyons will join us for our weekly movie review. We will talk some hoops with him as well. Thanks to Ryan Russillo again for joining us there. We're back in 4 minutes. Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN. Ben Lyons will join us, as he does every Friday, in just a few moments. It's all presented by Progressive Insurance. All our guests like Ben appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Don't forget to tune in for an AL West battle tomorrow as the A's host the Astros. Coverage begins at 1:30 Pacific on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app, and here on this very station. And don't forget to listen to ESPN Audio via your smart speaker. Audio at home, ESPN Audio at home, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Vans. Drive a Mercedes-Benz van and find out how far an extra mile really goes. From customization to service to financial assistance, Mercedes-Benz Vans are ready for anything. And don't forget, the NBA's back Sunday. Zion and the Pelicans host the Spurs, presented by Indeed. Coverage begins at 11:30 a.m. Pacific on this station and most ESPN radio stations. So Ben Lyons joins us here for his weekly movie review, and we will talk some hoops with him. Before we get into hoops, I always like to go back and forth with people on Twitter, specifically when they are Knicks fans. And there are very few Knicks fans I like, Ben. You're one of the few of them.
Thanks, buddy.
So you very kindly promoted that you were coming on the show, and one of your Knicks brethren, someone named Sean, tweeted out, I'm sure he, as in me, will also talk about a Heat beat the Knicks in 97, but failed to bring up 98, 99, and 2000. To which I responded, that's cute. You still think about those series? I only get to marvel at the three banners they've won since. You know what banners look like, right? So I still take joy, even though I don't get to do it as often, in making fun of the Knicks. But Ben, I'm glad that your Twitter following allowed me to do that for one brief moment.
Banners, the most decorated franchise in NBA history when it comes to All-Star Saturday Night Championships. Porzingis in the Skills in 17, three dunk contests for Nate Robinson, another for Kenny Walker. What do you mean banners? What are you talking about?
Exactly. Are you worried about LeBron at the restart? Are you worried about, like, you know, the fact that he specifically ramps himself up a certain way and he hasn't played well? It's been, and look, I'm not betting against him. I'm always betting on the dude, okay? But it is an interesting layer that I don't think very many of us thought of, which is, oh, yeah, of course, this guy has a specific regimen to how he wants to peak at a certain time, and it's not happening right now, and there's a shortened restart to the season. So what is your level of concern when it comes to him specifically?
Kenny Smith said something funny last night on the show. He said, even when you play small, you have to play big. The Lakers getting the number one seed, locking that up quickly, was the best thing to happen, but also the worst thing to happen, because it's totally thrown LeBron's rhythm, which is already totally thrown out of rhythm even further. And you might sit here on the outside looking in and scoff at that, but George, you know, professional athletes are creatures of habit, routine, who you have around you, all that stuff. It really does matter, especially 17 years in. Everyone's saying this is a throwback to basketball camp or the AAU days. Well, it's been a minute since LeBron's been in that world compared to some of the other younger guys in the league. So I am a little concerned, to be honest. He hasn't looked amazing, but at the same time, I'm not worried because they have locked up the number one seed. And to be honest, these games don't count for them, and they shouldn't be out there playing their stars as much as they are. I like seeing some of the bench guys get in the rotation and get some shots up and some continuity. But LeBron, I feel good. He'll be okay. I'm not worried. I'm a little concerned.
Yeah, exactly. I feel the same way. I'm going to bet on the guy till the wheels falls off. What about Anthony Davis? I was just talking about this with Russillo about some of his passivity, I guess if that's a word, and his passive nature at times. People have highlighted his performances in the fourth quarters against the Clippers as kind of an example of some of him being passive. 8 points in about 27 minutes of play in those fourth quarters over four games. What do you make of Anthony Davis and some of kind of the Jekyll and Hyde stuff you see in the fourth quarters specifically?
Yeah, it's a real point of concern, I think, because we haven't seen it yet. And in order to unlock that next level of basketball Zelda and complete the triangle, Anthony Davis has to be the best player on the floor, and that's including his own team. And is there going to be a moment where he says to LeBron, hey, LeBron, get out of the way. I got this. And every great alpha in the history of the sport has been able to do that. And I haven't seen him do that yet. That doesn't mean he can't do that, but that's what it's going to take for this Laker team to get over the hump and win a championship, is for him to say, I am the man, everyone else get out of my way, and let me go for 35 and 15 and five blocks and destroy everything. And if for whatever reason, you just sometimes want to grab him and just say, hey, snap out of it, like be that, it's in there, you know? And however he gets there is going to be the journey that gets them to a title, but that's going to be what the sauce is. Is he the best player on the planet?
Yeah, I mean, he's an extraterrestrial, right? Go be an extraterrestrial, Anthony Davis, in the fourth quarter. The Clippers have no matchup for you. Go get him. You know what I mean? Like that.
And don't feel bad about it. And don't feel like, well, I'm taking the shine from LeBron or I got to get my team. No, don't feel bad about it. You think Shaq felt bad about it? You think Garnett or Paul Pierce? No.
Right.
Just go out there and be the man and don't worry about it. Like, don't. Everything else will work out.
Yeah, the cute thing that's happening now around the NBA is, oh, watch out for the Blazers. They could beat the Lakers. I would be stunned if the Lakers didn't win that series in six games or less. What about you?
Stranger things have happened, George. You wanted to talk some smack about the Miami Heat. I remember a time in 1999 in an unusual season when they were the number one seed. How that worked out down in Miami, game five. That ball's still hanging on the rim for Allen Houston. Listen, man, weird season, weird year. Blazers have had tons of injuries. A team that was in the Western Conference Finals last year but lost eight guys. And so the guys they do have coming back, Nurkic and Zach Collins, are hurt for most of the year. Then they add this basketball god, this immortal who has come down from Mount Olympus to play with the Blazers and bless them with his abilities, and Carmelo Anthony. And he's been terrific. So I'm not counting him out, George. I'm not doubling.
Oh, here we go. Now I knew what this was about.
I'm not driving to Vegas. I'm not putting any bets down. I would be shocked as well, but I ain't counting him out because I've seen it happen before, buddy.
Go ahead. Sing the virtues of Melo. We were all wrong, by the way, on Melo. Now he did rededicate himself, both from a mentality standpoint, and he was willing to be a guy who wasn't going to take a lot of shots. He's never taken this little amount of shots per game in his career, and he got his body right. So his mind and his body are right, and he's performing. And I'm happy to see it, even though I didn't think that he had this in him as far as taking this role.
Consistently playing for the Blazers at a high level, contributing, and hasn't missed a Monday since the quarantine with his wine newsletter. Every Monday, he's putting out a newsletter with interviews with Snoop Dogg and Serena Williams about Pinot Noir. The man is a multimedia machine, raising money for social justice. I love Carmelo. He's been fantastic. And apology accepted, universe, on behalf of Carmelo. He accepts all of your apologies.
Speaking of the Blazers and wine, is the greatest story to come out of the bubble is that CJ McCollum keeps his room at 50 degrees because it's the best temperature for his wine.
I got four text messages about that. Four different friends sent me a text about CJ's love of Pinot Noir. I just had Channing Frye on CBS that guy's in the wine business in the Pinot. You know, the NBA wine thing, you know, from being on the road, and you see it in the bubble. PJ Tucker put up a nice Cabernet from Paso Robles the other day for about $300 a bottle. So, yeah, these guys are going hard on the wine in the bubble.
I will tell you this. There have been some fun nights on the road having wine with the broadcasters also love their wine. I will say that. there was definitely a night in New Orleans where we shut down a bar in a lobby in New Orleans. But either way, the Rockets. What do you think of the Rockets? Are you giving them a puncher's chance, Ben?
No, not really. It's fun. When they get hot and watch Harden dance, and is a good time. But I think Russ is a train wreck and a Tasmanian devil, and somebody who can easily shoot you out of games. Game 6 at Utah 2 years back, he was 13 of 43, including like 2 of 19 from the three. So no, I don't think the Rockets have a chance. I think it'll be a fun first round matchup, but no, they're not doing anything.
If the Clippers don't have Montrezl Harrell, which we expect him to be back, how does that change their chances to win a championship, in your opinion?
I think it really hurts them without Trez. Trez is really good. He's had a terrific year in the sixth man running, solid up front. Their only chance of slowing down Anthony Davis is to do it by committee. And Zubac, you saw, get manhandled by Porzingis last night, although he did hold his own offensively because Zinger's a wet piece of toilet paper on defense. But Zubac is not enough for the Clippers up front. They need Montrezl Harrell to win a championship. I know it's a wild statement to say, but I think it's 100% true.
All right, Ben, I'm going on vacation next week. You will be sitting here, canoodling with Greg and Laura and having a lot of fun for next week in my honor. But it is time for the weekly movie review. And because I'm going on vacation, in theory, I'm really staying at my house and just hanging out and doing nothing. What are the top 5 vacation movies this week?
Top 5 vacation comedies. You mentioned A Wild Night in New Orleans. I go for number 5 about a road trip, lifelong friends to the Essence Festival in New Orleans. It's the movie that made Tiffany Haddish a household name. At number 5 is Girls Trip. At number 4, this one, I was probably too young to see it when it came out, but it was a big one for me as a kid. One Crazy Summer, John Cusack and Demi Moore. He's a basketball player who doesn't get a scholarship. He wants to be a cartoonist. One Crazy Summer ensues. He falls in love. It's a really nuts movie. I love One Crazy Summer. Wet Hot American Summer at number 3, directed by David Wayne of The State fame, with Bradley Cooper and Amy Poehler and all-star cast. This is a movie that everyone recognized the true comedic genius that is Paul Rudd. At number 2, I remember seeing this as a kid and probably being too young for it. My dad remembers this special screening of The Great Outdoors with John Candy and Dan Aykroyd when the bear gets his tush shot off at the end. I lost it. It's written by John Hughes, and it's with Annette Bening as well. Check out The Great Outdoors. And number 1, of course, it's all of them, right? It's National Lampoon's The Original Family Vacation, The European Trip, The Christmas Vacation, even Papa Giorgio out in Vegas gets some love. The best one, of course, is The Trip to Wally World. It's weird, George. You're a dad now, so you probably see it more often than I do. I don't have kids yet, but I'm starting to turn more and more into Clark Griswold the older I get, and I'm okay with that. So there's my list of top 5 vacation comedies.
There you go. Do you have any questions for me about trying to work with Greg and Laura next week before we go?
Yeah, like what's going on with like the promos and the tea, like, you know, all the housekeeping stuff? Do I have to push any buttons? Do I have to do anything, or can I just talk?
You got to read a lot and then talk.
Okay, read then talk. Got it. But no button pushing, right?
No button pushing.
All right, keep me away from the red button, guys, and I think we'll be fine.
All right, fair enough. Have fun next week. Thank you for sitting in. Thank you for doing this every week, and we will talk to you in the afternoon at some point. So there you go. We'll have to figure out a time in the afternoon that works for you.
Sounds good. Sounds good. Have a good weekend, buddy.
All right, brother. Take care. There he is. Ben Lyons. Follow him on Twitter. I am Ben Lyons. So, all right, kids. You know, you guys keep the house in order, right? Don't have any parties while I'm gone, right? I know it's a pandemic, but don't, you know, make sure the house is in order when I get back. That's all I'm asking for. All right, thanks to Ben. Thanks to Greg and Laura. Thanks to Ryan Russillo. Thanks to Kirk Morrison, all our friends. We appreciate them. We appreciate you calling in, tuning in. Stay healthy. Stay safe. We love you. Again, Ben is in for me next week. Starting Monday, August 17th, Sedano and LZ, 4-7 right after Mason in Ireland. New lineup, August 17th. Have a great weekend. See ya.